Though never far from the sidelines, the immigration debate in Europe gripped the headlines in early March after French President Nicolas Sarkozy said there are too many foreigners in France and pledged to halve their number. The French president also threatened to withdraw from Europe's Schengen open borders accord that allows passport-free travel between 23 EU states unless more is done to stop illegal immigration. In the midst of a heated re-election campaign, in which illegal immigration is one of the key issues, Sarkozy gained points in the polls after those comments. The president of the Migrant Policy Institute, a Washington and Brussels-based think tank, Dr. Demetrios Papademetriou, says steps taken in that direction have so far fallen well short of that objective and stand improbable success. Speaking to me earlier, Dr. Papademetriou also comments on anti-immigrant sentiment in Europe, Islamic integration, and gives some suggestions for strategies to improving the EU's track record on migration.
President Sarkozy shows that he doesn't learn from other people's experiences. And let me say what I mean by that. When the Conservatives were running in the UK, they decided to basically, you know, make one of their electoral platforms that they were going to reduce immigration. Thankfully, they didn't say 50%, which is what President Sarkozy said. And I know the minister personally, a good man, Damian Green, who has been struggling to try to meet that political objective. And he's taken extraordinary steps. And the reality is that he's not even coming close to the goals that, in the heat and passion of electoral politics, you know, his chief, the prime minister, enunciated. So Mr. Sarkozy, you know, will probably find it very, very difficult to actually, you know, be able to implement something like that, because countries take on international obligations. You know, there is a European and a global, but supported by the European Convention on Human Rights, a requirement that families reunify. So Mr. Sarkozy does not have the license to basically say you cannot reunify. Okay? Nor does he have the means to say asylum seekers will not make it to France. Because we all know that once an asylum seeker makes it into European space, okay, whether it's the Canary Islands or France, it's very, very difficult to remove them. Now, Monsieur Sarkozy will say that I have been removing 30,000 people each year. But 30,000 people each year is a drop in the ocean. And they are illegally resident people. So he's going to have a very hard time achieving that goal. Unless, of course, he makes France so inhospitable that nobody would want to go there. That's an entirely different story. But in terms of, you know, the French government being able to prevent people, to reduce the number by 50%, it sounds to me extremely improbable. And speaking, you know, as an outsider, probably an irresponsible statement.
You are an immigrant yourself from Greece to the United States. Do you see any similarities, differences, besides, you know, you mentioned a few differences about the United States in terms of economics, but between the U.S. and Europe, the way the two systems deal with immigration?
Yes, phenomenal differences that go to the sort of the very essence of what America is and how she understands, it understands itself, versus how, and here I'm going to make some gross generalizations, how Europe sees itself and behaves in that regard. In the United States, the presumption is that once somebody comes to the United States through one of the many legal streams that we have, we take about 1.1 million people per year as permanent immigrants, and 500,000, 600,000, 700,000 as long-term temporary immigrants. The presumption is that these people are on their path to becoming permanent residents and then citizens. And everything is geared toward that particular path, to facilitate this path. In Europe, that's not the way that Europe understands, you know, what foreigners do, foreign-born people do when they come to Europe. So that's a fundamental difference right then and there. Why? Because then in the United States, society organizes itself all the way down to the very, very local level, the community level, the neighborhood level, to accept and incorporate people. In Europe, what you have is central governments trying to create integration strategies and trying to force people to take languages and requiring this and requiring there, while the public body language continues to be, you really shouldn't be coming here.
Okay, but how influential is this anti-immigrant sentiment in Europe in determining the policy that we see?
Well, you know, people are not stupid. Immigrants are not stupid. They have wonderful communication networks. You know, they know what they can and cannot do. They know where there are opportunities and where there are no opportunities, et cetera, et cetera. So they see through all of these things and they decide where to go, okay? Plus, people who have been here for generations will reunify with their families. So there will be more immigration in Europe, both because of the things, the factors that I mentioned, but also because if we take Italy, for instance, and Italy is one of a dozen European countries, because the demographics make it inevitable that there will be more immigration to Europe. You know, when you take a place like Italy, since we're here in Italy, and when you consider that for 40 years now, two generations, 40 years is, Italian women have far fewer babies than is required to keep a population stable.
And exactly. The birth rate is
so low.
The birth and death rates are almost
exactly.
equal.
Mm-hmm. Almost equal. It means that at a certain point, you will need more workers to do the work, pay the taxes that will support the aging population. Okay? So it's almost a no-brainer that there will be more immigration. Then the policy dilemma and the political dilemma for European leaders is, do you prepare the ground now for creating a system through which people can come in legally? This way you select whom you want and you create the rules of how family reunification will happen. You meet your legal obligations in terms of refugee and asylum applicants and at the same time open the door smartly for talented immigrants, people who want to come and live and work in your place, and you do it now? Or do you keep saying no, 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 and then you reach a point where you hit the wall, as it were, because of demographics, and then somehow you have to open up at unreasonable rates? What we know about immigration is if you do it slowly and over time, the reaction to it becomes much, much less. If you do it suddenly and in large numbers, the reaction tends to be very bitter. It creates anxiety. It creates sort of cultural wars. So Europe gets it in terms of policy, gets it intellectually, doesn't get it politically yet. That's why you hear these, you know, statements by Sarkozy and others. So we're at a point in a decade, I think, this current decade, where Europeans will have to basically sort of rethink of how they talk about immigration.
One thing we haven't talked about is Islam, but that is definitely a part of the debate that's going on with immigration, especially here in Europe. Is the integration of the Muslim community in Europe or in the United States, for that matter, is that of concern for immigration people working in the field?
Well, to the extent that immigration and Muslim immigration, when they get together, they create a reaction in some countries, not in every country. The reaction to Muslim immigration in the Netherlands is not the same reaction that it is in Italy, okay? And a country that really, for decades, had a very hard time dealing with its Muslim population, namely Germany, has taken dramatic steps since 2005 to incorporate that population. So, yes, Muslim, particularly radical Muslims, are a problem of varying intensity in certain places. But there are ways that are already being practiced in Europe to actually incorporate that population. And however you slice it, you know, Europe has between 15 and 20 million Muslims in its midst. You can like it or not like it, they're not going anywhere. They're there. And interestingly enough, one of the places that has a very hard time with it, although it's now radical in its opposition to it, France, is the largest Muslim population. Now, here again, the United States seems like it has an advantage, but the Muslim population in the United States is not the same thing as the Muslim population in Europe.
Why?
Because ultimately, many of the people who come from Muslim-dominant countries are actually Christians. So they may be Arabs, but they're Christians. Secondly, the largest proportion of the Muslim practicing population in the United States are black Muslims, Americans, in other words. And third, because both the public stance of the country, but again, all of the societal institutions on the ground work so hard to make sure that we don't have the enmities, you know, across religions that, you know, other countries suffer from, all of that gives an advantage to the United States.
But is it also a question of instilling in these newcomers and their children a sense of identity with the new country that they've chosen to live in? I remember, you know, going to school back in the United States, I don't want to say how many years ago, but, you know, we learned the national anthem. We were taught to recite a pledge of allegiance to the United States of America. It was instilled in us a sense of citizenship.
This is an excellent question. It's probably even a comment. In the United States, we ask a lot of our immigrants, but we don't ask them to abandon their identity. We ask them to engage in building society with us, civic integration, so people don't feel forced to abandon whatever it is, their religion, their language, etc., etc., as long as it doesn't violate the law. You cannot have honor killing, so you cannot, you know, sort of punish your children or do, you know, things that are simply illegal, not just unacceptable, but illegal. That empowers people to continue to be who they are, while at the same time working together with their fellow citizens on the ground to continue to work on that project that we call America. Vast difference. And that is the essence.
But Joe, you're saying, or you're implying, that Europe hasn't got that secret yet, hasn't got it.
Yeah, Europe still has a very hard time with that. Maybe intellectually they get it, perhaps, but they, you know, they're really not anywhere near where they ought to be in that regard. And, you know, different, that's why I was saying it's a gross generalization to talk about Europe, because different countries do all of these things very differently. Some countries went to the extreme of allowing full license to their Muslim communities to radicalize each other, et cetera, and then produce radical Muslims that basically oppose the society in which they live. Others have tried to restrict the rights of Muslims to a degree that creates a sense of, in a sense, a wariness on the part of that community that they're under attack, under suspicion. And when a community feels under attack and suspicion, what does it do? It closes. And then it easily becomes victim to their own charlatans, as it were, okay, and demagogues. So what we need to do is sort of balance all of these things. It's only fair, however, to also say that these are new things, or relatively new things, for Europe. Europe knows how to integrate different populations. Look at Italy, you know, but you have to go 100, 150 years or earlier in order to look for those good examples. In the 20th century, Europe, individual member states of Europe, thought of themselves as monolithic, monocultural, and in many cases, you know, with a dominant religion, at least in the South. In the North, they learned how to live together because they were so deeply divided on religious grounds, for instance, and social grounds. Okay? Well, Europe can figure it out. It will take a little longer. And we need to isolate and marginalize all the demagogues. In other words, mainstream politicians must learn and use the right language that isolates and marginalizes extremists.
Dimitrios Papadimitriou is the president of the Migrant Policy Institute.